right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode 140. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning, Adam.
How's it going?
It's going well.
Same as yesterday.
Same as yesterday. I saw you got that one up yesterday.
Yeah, I put it right up. I put it up so fast that I forgot to put music to it. And I forgot to put the intro and outro music. I was like, man, that was really easy. I wonder why it seemed so easy. And then I was like, oh yeah, I forgot to. Because when I put music into it, I have to like convert the file from an MP4 to an MP3, which takes a long time, and download it, then put it in the editing software and like add the songs. But it was like a throwback to our old days.
You get all the credit because you do it all.
Yeah, I know.
I just ride on your coattail.
Yeah. I was thinking we need to have like some. I like the intro song. We might need a new intro theme with like talking over it that explains what the show is and the premise of it, you know. So if anybody wants to if there's any voiceover actors that listen, anybody that can talk like a 1990s
game show
not a game show host, but a movie trailer guy. It's really interesting to go back and watch those old trailers when they did that, when they're like, a man, his mistress, you know. They don't do that anymore, but they.
No, you're right. You're right. One of my channels on my TV, I watch reruns of what is it? SUV, the crime show.
SVU.
SVU, and this one channel always.
Law and Order, sport utility vehicle.
Exactly. They do the voiceover throughout the whole thing. You know, like Elliot walks to the window and looks out pensively, you know, or scary music is playing in the background. And it, the whole time. And Eric walked in last night and I was watching it. And, you know, he says, why do you have this commentary going on? I said, I don't even hear it anymore.
Yeah. And what is it? It's a special feature of the show?
No, it's just my TV. I must have pushed a button and I don't know what button to push to undo it. And so.
Yeah, I watch a lot of stuff with subtitles on, even if it's in English, it helps out. It's kind of scary thinking that my hearing might be going, but I don't know. Especially if they're speaking with like British accents and stuff.
Yeah.
I think hopefully it's just, I have a flat screen TV like everybody else now, and they have like pretty crappy speakers, so it's hard to hear. And then, you know, but yeah, other than that, yesterday was a fun show. That was a lot of, well, I can't say it was really that fun, but it was a lot of info.
And, you know, thinking about it afterwards, and you asked me how I felt, and I said, I felt happy or hopeful or whatever after talking about all this heavy, you know, gloom and doom future, but there is hope there.
Yeah. Yeah. Does it, have you heard any update on Grandpa Joe and his disease?
According to, I don't know where I read it. He's got all his boosts, and he went right to his doctor and got that medication that they give.
Paxlovid.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
He's hanging in there.
That's good to hear. Yeah. No Agenda was half of the guys, half of No Agenda. I think Adam Curry was saying that this is it for him.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Yeah. A lot of memes are up, or where they show like the internet's undefeated, you know, like it doesn't, if you write something or say something on video or on the internet, it doesn't ever go away. And there's just so many videos of him saying, if you get these vaccines, you won't get COVID, you know?
And well, then, if he experiences any more brain fog, he's going to be driving even blinder.
Yeah. It's strange though, because he is in rough shape. So if he comes out of this on top, I mean, of course, he's not just getting what you would get if you went to the doctor. He's getting all sorts of like Adderall and baby's blood and stuff like that too. But it's just strange, like all the people that you know that are still pretty scared of the air, and they've seen everybody almost in there. Almost everybody's had this thing. I don't know if I had it. I got pretty sick, but I don't know if it was just seasonal illness, you know? And, but everybody that's claimed to have had it definitively is fine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just so weird that people are still, it's so strange that it's still in the news, and it's still, I mean, it's all over Portland still.
Uh-huh. So like people, kind of the same here.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, it's not where I live.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I just had a thought about you know, it used to be that maybe you knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody who had it. I know so many people who have had it.
Yeah, and they're all,
just about everybody I know.
Yeah, and they're all and they're all fine.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
it's just the people that are still really scared. I just want to like shake them and say like, well, what if you've taken all these precautions to get it, everybody else has too, and they've just gotten it and they're fine,
mm-hmm,
for now. Like, what do you think is going to happen if you get this thing?
I think it's people who it's their makeup to go to the worst case scenario.
Yeah. Why do you think for some people the worst case scenario is you know, you die when you're 75. Why, mm-hmm, do you think that's so scary for so many people of your generation? Because did you ever have like a grandma who was just like, oh, when I go, I'm ready to go. You know, like, I mean, my grandma would say stuff like that to me, you know, and she's in her 80s, you know, she was fine. She's fine with it. You know, she lived, uh-huh, her life. And it seems like your generation are terrified of death.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't ever really, that's never occurred to me, but I think it's
lack of any sense of spirituality. I think that your generation, I don't know if you got cheated out of it, but you guys, I'm not singling you out.
I know that
you guys are the generation. I mean, it's passed on to millennials and Gen X like me, the generation of spiritual, not religious.
Uh-huh.
And that shit doesn't really work. Like,
oh, I wouldn't say that. I think it's just another name for, you know, the end result is we want to be good human beings, hopefully, and you know, not do leave this place in worse shape than when we entered it. But
your generation did that on a massive scale.
But I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing.
To leave it worse than you got it?
Oh, well, yes. No, I meant the spirituality versus religion part.
Yeah. Well, it might work for some people, but I think most people that say that don't just say it.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it's really very, very real.
Yeah, it's really easy to, it's almost like a cop-out. Well, I don't practice religion, but I'm very spiritual.
And then especially where you live, if you tell people that you're religious, that you go to like a church or something, you're...
Yeah, it's almost like, ooh, really?
Yeah, that's crazy.
It is. I watched a documentary this week. Michael Pollan, the author,
mm-hmm,
he wrote, I think it's called The Omnivore's Dilemma and The Secret Life of Plants, I think was the name of the other one. And this is his latest book, which is already a documentary, called You Can Change Your Mind. And it's three parts. The first, it's about psychedelics and how helpful, how therapeutic it can be if done in the right manner, and how really it started when they first were doing research and studying back in the 40s, I guess it was. It was viewed as, you know, therapy. It wasn't recreational. And then Timothy Leary got involved, and
the CIA got involved. All those guys were CIA. Terrence McKenna, all those guys, they're all CIA. That's why I don't buy any of the new like psychedelic stuff coming out. I put it on the same thing as like, well, if the government and people are saying that it's beneficial, like UFOs and stuff like that, it's just where my mind goes. I can't trust it.
Yeah. But it was, you know, the point of the documentary was that, you know, they can be beneficial done in the right surroundings and the right dosing and blah, blah. And, you know, people have been helped greatly with PTSD.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Addiction.
I could trust that maybe it would help with PTSD. It bothers me when people are like, well, DMT is a God hack. And people are just looking for a shortcut for a spiritual awakening. And it's like, yeah. No, why do you want a shortcut for the most important thing that could ever possibly happen to you as a spiritual being? Why do you want to just take some stuff and think that you got there? Why not like go through the struggle and the suffering and everything like that? Because I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm obviously biased by what I've been doing, you know, recently, and you know, I don't want to get preachy or anything. If it works for people and they are having a good life, that's the most important thing. But I think like struggle and suffering and all that stuff is what gets you closer to God. So
trial by fire,
not going to Joshua Tree and eating mushrooms. You know, that's not the spiritual awakening.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not what they're not pushing, but that's not the message that the documentary is trying to make either. Yeah. You know, they're not.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. There's this guy, Jan Irving. He's a total fucking asshole.
Jan?
J-A-N.
Uh-huh.
And he like is notorious for going on people's podcasts and like being a dick and like super confrontational and like yelling at him. There's a famous Higher Side Chats where he does it to Greg Carlwood. But he's done good work in exposing like all, he's the first guy that ever gave Joe Rogan DMT. He used to be a psychonaut. And I don't know if he described himself as that, but like he's discovered all these, you know, psychedelic gurus and the McKennas and the Learys and Ken Kesey and all that stuff, that they're all CIA. They're all, you know, government plants. And I forget who, somebody on Twitter was like tagged, you know, tweeted at me, like you can put my name and then somebody else's name on Twitter in like the same tweet thread, and they'll both show up and it'd be like, Adam, you should get Jan Irving on. And like, I was like, oh, that would be awesome. I'm a little bit nervous that I'd get the Greg Carlwood treatment though, just as like a joke. And that guy, like the guy, cause he can see that too. He like tweets back and just like was like super confrontational and like a total asshole within like one tweet of I've never talked to the guy before. And he's just like, yeah, I forget what he said first. And I was like, okay, well, he said something like how Greg Carlwood isn't really Greg Carlwood. That's not his real name. Da, da, da. I was like, okay, well, we'd love to have you on sometime to talk about it if you're open to it. And then he writes back, oh, I thought you were scared. Here's my latest appearance on the Freeman Fly show, but you're probably not interested. And I was like, all right,
dude,
well, you can't come on my show because
you're an ass,
because you're a dick, and I really don't want you, you know, being a jerk to Deborah or something like that. So Yeah, but I would like to talk to somebody that knows a lot about the psychedelics and, and you know, the benefits and and but also the government, you know, doing funny stuff with them. So
ask Emily. She has a friend from high school whose mother was, you know, on the magic bus.
Oh yeah, she said her ex-boyfriend's mom was on the Kool-Aid acid test or whatever.
Yeah, and they drove they had the bus sitting in front of their house. They live here in Marin County.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I don't know if that'll lead to anything. I'm sure it wouldn't, but
yeah. Well, our guest's here. Let's pause and let him in.
All right.
All right, guys, we're back. And today we're lucky to have our guest, Jason Basler. And you are the co-founder of the Free Thought Project. So I know Deborah doesn't know what that is. I've been familiar with you guys for a long time. Can you tell Deborah and everybody that's not familiar with you guys what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hello, Adam. Hello, Deborah. I'm happy to be here with you guys. I've heard a lot of good stuff about your podcast. In fact, I think it was Truthzilla who first mentioned you guys and said, I have to jump on with Deborah gets red pilled at some point. So I'm glad
to be Scott's here. And dude.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it happened twice. I think there was two different organizations I did podcasts with. And they're like, no, you guys, you have to do a podcast with Deborah gets red pilled. So just so you know, you got some people supporting you out there.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, my name is Jason Basler. I am the co-founder of the Free Thought Project, which originated in 2013 with the co-founder, Matt Agarist, who's also our editor-in-chief. And it primarily just focuses on government accountability, police accountability. We kind of go outside of that spectrum a little bit, talk about counterintuitive information, the drug war, pharmaceutical, big pharma, all that stuff. I mean, pretty much anything that has to do with government corruption, we're on it. I also am the founder of Police the Police, which I founded in 2012, which is a police accountability organization, mostly based online. And we just document and archive police brutality, police misconduct, and abuse of authority. But yeah, I've been doing this work for about 10 years now, and it's been a crazy road, a crazy journey with plenty of censorship packed in there. But I am still here. I'm still doing this full time as a full time day job, and I'm happy to be here to talk to you guys.
Yeah, we're happy you're here too, man. I just I went on your website today. I realized you guys have a podcast too. How's that going?
Going well. Yeah, it started off a little slow. I just mentioned, you know, we've been dealing with censorship pretty frequently now. But in 2018, we lost nearly 6 million fans when both Facebook and Twitter took us down within hours of each other. So we've been just basically trying to rebuild since then. And I think we launched the podcast like a week after that happened, just to kind of explain what was going on and where people could find us. And it's been kind of steadily growing since then. We didn't really take it too seriously for the first couple of years, but this year we've been doing at least one podcast a week. We've had a bunch of big name guests and even, you know, smaller name guests, but people are doing really important, really good work. So yeah, all in all, it's picking up steam and it's going well. Thanks for asking.
I saw you just had Whitney Webb on, and you've had John Bush, and yeah, so that's all good stuff.
Yeah. A lot of good activists, people doing just amazing work in this, you know, sphere. And Whitney Webb, that was actually our most successful podcast ever. Like, she is just, man, she is so smart.
Yeah. She's so good. She's hard to keep up with sometimes, just cause she's like, you have to have a pretty good frame of reference to follow along 100%, you know, but she's,
she'll make you feel stupid real quick.
Yeah. I haven't heard her in a while, but, I should get on there. And can you get that podcast on like iTunes and stuff like that? Or are you guys just off the website? Or?
Yeah. So we're on the website. We got the whole tab there for podcasts, but we're also on Podbean, Apple, iTunes, the what's the other one? Spotify. I mean, all the big ones basically. So
cool. Yeah. So, recently I saw you guys are still on Instagram. They didn't cancel you though, right?
They've tried several times, and it's only been as much of like a shadow ban, like a severe shadow ban, but little do they know we have Facebook insiders. So we could always, well, not always. I don't want to speak. I don't want to jinx myself here, but we usually have an inside source to kind of recover the reach and everything. So
Cool.
What did you do that got you canceled off of those platforms?
Oh man. I think we just combated establishment misinformation. It's kind of a big can of worms. I don't know how far we want to go into it, but they claim we did three different things. They claim that we engaged in spam. They claim that we engaged in inauthentic coordinated behavior. And then they also claim that we were using fake accounts and we were like a Russian troll farm. And this is right around when the whole Russian collusion narrative kind of came about 2016, 2018. It was still kind of hot and heavy during that time. So they kind of muddied the waters and threw us in there as well. And it, you know, obviously a lot of people who don't pay close attention to this kind of stuff, you know, just probably assumed we were Russian assets and didn't think twice about it. So, it's very malicious at this point. It doesn't really matter what we do. If it doesn't matter if we put out completely factual, 100% accurate information straight from the CDC, if there's, you know, any specific keywords, they're going to take it down. You know, if it challenged the narrative, they're going to take it down. I'm sure you guys have dealt with this too. It seems like anybody in this space has kind of dealt with it in one form or another.
Yeah, we've gotten strikes that have like eventually worn off on YouTube. And then most recently, like I had Jason Burmis on like almost 2 years ago, and I just got a strike for it. So
sure. Yeah.
But all right. But yeah, so I'm following you on your personal page on Instagram. And I saw a little video that you did on the 4chan Hunter Biden iCloud leak, and it's something that, you know, I believed that the laptop was real since you know when it first came out, and it was told to us that it was, you know, the same thing, Russian disinformation and stuff like that, and I tried to talk to Deborah about it. You know, she's from the other side and still kind of, she's breaking away slowly but surely, but still a little bit
dragging my feet,
stuck in there. And it's understandable. You know, it's hard to break free from stuff that makes you feel warm and cozy, you know. And I'm in an echo chamber as well, and I'm propagandized too. And it took me a long time to realize that too. But, I wanted to bring to light and have her kind of realize what's going on with this 4chan iCloud leak, because I know that if it was brought up on any of the news media outlets that she's familiar with, that as soon as like they say 4chan, you know, you get right into QAnon and all that stuff and you know, white nationalism and stuff like that. But I mean, it can be factual evidence on there as well.
Sure.
So
sure. Yeah. Some of the greatest internet sleuths basically live on a lot of these forums, you know, and message boards. So we can't completely dismiss it. Although I would say, you know, as I did in my video, just for the sake of transparency, it's like, well, there also hasn't been any official, you know, official, whatever that means, sources that have confirmed that these leaks have been accurate or true. However, Motherboard, whose associated device, did make the claim, which as far as I could tell is accurate, that we haven't seen any of these new videos or pictures that have leaked since the, you know, alleged iCloud leak happened. So that's something, that's evidence, right? Like we haven't seen that from the laptops. They haven't been floating around at all, you know, the internet. But the part about this story that kind of fascinated me was that, like, I'm very much into this world. I'm a news junkie. This is what I do. I get up at 4 a.m, sometimes earlier every morning. I look at the news. I look at all the narratives. I see what's going on. I keep a very close eye on this stuff. So when I saw that these leaks happened and it was, you know, Hunter Biden, I mean, obviously this is like, you know, the president's son. This is a big story. And it was the internet, once again, kind of saving the day, kind of doing the job of what mainstream should be doing, you know, the mainstream media and you know, so-called journalists. So they ended up, you know, allegedly hacking Hunter Biden's iCloud account, and they found a big trove of a bunch of different information, pictures, videos. So the part about it to me that just struck me as interesting is like nobody in the establishment is talking about it until yesterday, literally. And I looked at the news and kind of updated my own you know, cloud here, and just kind of had to find the latest information before I did this interview. But nobody was talking about it. And I thought that was interesting because, I mean, look, like, here's Biden talking about, you know, all these, you know, gun control issues. And obviously we've had a bunch of mass shootings and stuff. And here's Hunter Biden with an illegal gun. You know, he's waving it around. He's showing it off on the video. And yet, like, you know, the media is not coming to their senses and not talking about it at all. So that was like a big red flag to me. And, you know, here he is, a bunch of drugs. And of course, there's no secret that he has a crack cocaine addiction. He's talked about it in his memoir and his biography before. That's no secret. But at the same time, it's like, well, there's more and more evidence of him with these substances. So why is he getting
under the 94 crime bill? What would have 20 grams of crack gotten you?
Oh, geez. I don't know. I would have to look that up. I don't know off the top of my head, at least 15 years, if not more, you know, especially back then. I know things have been kind of repealed and rolled back a little bit since then, but yeah, it would have been some serious time for him. You know, it would have been obviously not a good look for the administration, not a good look for Biden.
Or the author of the bill. So
sure. Yeah, exactly. The architect of the bill, a lot of these drug war laws that we're, you know, still stuck with 50 years later, even though they've proven a failure. So, you know, there's even images of him with questionably young women that almost look, some of them look like underage girls. This again should be like red flags. Like, why is nobody talking about this? So, you know, it just struck me as interesting, like, okay, like maybe we could see the mainstream media isn't attached to this story because they have their own agenda. But like, what about, I don't know, big tech and the fact checkers, you know, like we're always hearing from them. You know, if I happen to quote, you know, something that Dr. Robert Malone said, you know, literally yesterday, I mean, they're on my ass, they're fact checking me about it. So like, why all of a sudden is there just kind of this, I don't know, stall, I guess, or like this, you know, it's not like this immediate action about these Hunter Biden leaks. And it's like, well, that's interesting. Like, why aren't they on top of this story? Like they're on top of every other story that they have an agenda to push for. So that was a red flag. And there's no mention of it by the White House, by the Biden administration, and nobody's talking about it. So in a way that should be a red flag, right? I mean, we're so used to the fact checkers being on our ass. We're so used to them being this quote, like arbiter of truth. Like, why is nobody talking about this? Why isn't there any type of censorship or fact checking? Which, hey, I'm not here to call for censorship, but I mean, it should be kind of suspicious. So to me, I kind of had this own angle that I conjured up in my mind, like, hey, look, like they're trying to censor us all the time. You know, we can't talk about certain informations, but like the internet, to a certain degree, just silenced the establishment, right? Like they can't talk about this stuff because either A, they realize that they made a mistake censoring and calling the Biden laptops fake. You know, that whole thing came about, and it turned out the Washington Post did some deep analysis and it turned out the laptop was real. So they were kind of, you know, eating their foot on that. They kind of had to backtrack. Some of them even, apologized.
New York Times came out with it, but it's all after the fact. If New York Times would have said that this is real, when it first came out right before the election, you know, I don't necessarily trust elections either.
Sure.
But
you think that, you know, maybe the other side would find this, you know, want to plaster it everywhere.
Well, yeah. And I think they have like Fox News, OANN. I mean, some of these, you know, like right wing media sources and companies, even the New York Post is kind of invested into a little bit, but I would say most people probably largely agree that most legacy media leans left. So they just don't really have that incentive. They don't really, and that's kind of what my point was, I was trying to make, was that like, either they don't want to put their foot in their mouth again, because this could be absolutely, you know, authentic and real, which I'm kind of leaning towards that's the case. Or B, they just don't want to talk about it at all. They don't want to have any type of mention about it because it's just more bad press for Biden. It's more bad press for his administration, for the White House. And I mean, let's face it, there's just clear double standards here. You can't really get past that, right?
What are the what are some of the implications of Joe Biden being involved with the information on the iCloud?
Sure. So I don't know if there's so much as far as what I could tell information from what I've seen that really associates Joe Biden in a lot of this. I think at least the iCloud leaks, but the laptop leaks. Now, that is something that Biden has been associated with. Apparently, with his son's negotiations with his former dealings in Ukraine, he's had different positions that he's held with different organizations and businesses in Ukraine. And he's basically more or less been like a proxy who's funneled apparently money to the Biden family. This is more or less speculation. We don't have any hard evidence of that so far, but there has been certain things. Like in April of this year, a grand jury witness asked to ID the big guy. The big guy gets 10%. That was in one of Hunter Biden's emails. And so that seems suspicious. Like, who's the big guy, you know? And I think everybody kind of could speculate who the big guy is. And apparently the email on the Hunter Biden laptop said he was supposed to get 10% stake in a company that he created with a China energy company, who is Hunter's ex-business partners. And apparently the Tony Bobulinski, who was Hunter's ex-business partner, confirmed the big guy was Joe Biden. So again, there's no like solid concrete evidence on this far, but there is a probe apparently that's kind of in the works right now. They've been apparently working on this probe into all these Hunter Biden accusations since February, but it just recently kind of stalled out. And I mean, I could get into all that as well if you kind of want to hear about it. But I think that's, to answer your question, so far, like the only real connection that I've been able to tell that has any weight behind it.
Yeah, it's speculation, but it's pretty easy to figure some stuff out. But it's hard when you have to actually prove it, I guess.
Yeah.
But one thing that I brought it up probably the most of anything I ever talked about on the show is Joe Biden at the CFR talking, you know, on video about how he told people in Ukraine that he wasn't going to give them like $1 billion unless they fired a prosecutor who was looking into their family ties with Burisma and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's a whole can of worms. I'm not like super, you know, on top of that, all that stuff, but I do know it's messy from like the surface level stuff that I have read into it. But and here's another thing. I mean, the billions upon billions have been sent to Ukraine so far, you know, like it's crazy. I mean, generally, from my research, like the US sends about $40 billion a year to foreign nations for foreign aid. And we gave straight up $40 billion in one bill to Ukraine, and it's been billions.
What's the running tally now? Like
nobody knows.
80 million or something like that. There's,
from what I could tell, it's probably between like 60 to 65, but nobody knows. You could even do this yourself. You could have, you know, if anybody's listening to this, go onto Google and try to type in like how many billions have been sent to Ukraine. Nobody knows. The CBO doesn't know. The DOD says 5 billion. I mean, everybody's kind of saying something different. Yet we still see story after story coming from the media saying, well, here's another billion sent to Ukraine. Well, here's another 5 billion. Here's another 440 million for, you know, equipment, military training. I mean, aid, all these things. And it's just flowing out the door like faster than I've ever seen billions of dollars.
And it's so crazy. None of us, like I hear a billion. I don't know what that means, yeah. But it's, you got to like take it to that. The best way I've ever heard it explained is with that second analogy, right? Have you ever heard that? It's like if a dollar was a second, like a million would be like 11 days or something like that. I might be totally off like on this, but a billion is 30 years or something like that.
Yeah. I've seen that too. Yeah, I don't know the exact statistic, but I think it's hard to wrap your head around. I mean,
it's,
you know,
and it's just these constant number soup that's just always flowing. National debt, da 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 da. Nobody even thinks about it anymore.
Sure. I mean, yeah, another $33 trillion on top of that for the national debt, and I mean, the exchange from the M to the B has been like unnoticed by the American people, and the B to the T, you know, it's like, no, we're talking about billions now, guys. You know, we're not talking about billions anymore. No, we're actually talking about trillions now when it comes to the debt. And it's insane. And you know, what's even more crazy is like some of these Javelin, Stinger, like missile, like US equipment, military equipment that's been sent over there is now starting to show up on the dark web as well. And this has happened at least twice now that I've seen. So it's like this equipment, all this stuff that we're sending over there, like they don't know where it's going. In fact, there's even a White House official on record saying it basically enters a big black hole. We don't have any way to track it. We have no idea where it's going. And so, hey, like these people are smart, you know, they're selling it on the black market. They're going to get some good money for it, probably to terrorist organizations. And who knows, it wouldn't be the first time we've armed terrorist organizations, you know? So
Yeah. With our stuff. What I've heard is, I want to hear what you think about this, is that a lot of the stuff that we're shipping over there, the military equipment, is just kind of old stuff that we don't want anymore, that we're getting rid of so that we can justify
buying more,
a whole new budget to buy more militant, like new military equipment and stuff like that. And Ukraine is kind of just like the Appalachia of Eastern Europe, where it's just exploited and just kind of a sad place. That's just, you know, people go to launder money and rich people go to traffic prostitutes and do drugs. And it's crazy.
Yeah, the Pandora Papers, I think, were released last year. They were leaked in the Vault 7 leak, if I remember correctly. And it basically said, that like Ukraine has the most organizations associated with money laundering, offshore accounts, like any country in the world, which is, absolutely insane. And I mean, who knows how many billions have been sent. I did have another point there, but I lost it. There's just so much, you know, there's so much to like, to speak on, and the rabbit hole goes so deep with a lot of stuff that it's mind blowing. And you're right. Like a lot of people, it's just like, they can't wrap their heads around the severity, like how deep this stuff goes. And I don't even want to connect the dots half the time. Like, honestly, I'm like here looking at all this information. I'm like, wait a second. Like, I don't want to believe that, but it makes sense. And it seems to be seemingly true, you know?
Yeah. Deborah, do you have any questions or thoughts so far?
I'm just taking it all in, but I'm wondering, you know, what the, how big can it get before, you know, anything gets done or people start demanding. I guess we're just all in the dark. We just don't even know.
There's a certain degree of that for sure. I think, unfortunately, we're so entrenched in our political identity as a country, and there's very little intellectual integrity left, that people are so tribalistic that they just latch on to the left or the right, and even the center. I mean, even centrists and even libertarians. And like, sometimes we just get so caught up in our own perspective, our own worldviews, that it seems like we kind of get blinded to the solutions, you know, and taking action. And we just become so divisive. That's like all we end up doing is just clashing with each other.
Yeah. It's so hard because people are so like entrenched and polarized, that if this case blew open and everybody was exposed to what the truth of this whole thing is, that the Bidens are trafficking underage prostitutes, there's massive money laundering and all this stuff with Ukraine and China and stuff, it does, like to people in Deborah's friend circle, that means like Donald Trump won or something like that. It's not that. It's the truth won, you know. And it's what do you think the implications would be if like the majority of Americans started realizing what's going on with this, and it became fact and truth?
I think we're moving in that direction. I say this in quite a few interviews and podcasts that I do. You know, we're in the age of information right now. I believe we're moving towards the age of accountability. And it just seems like that's where the technology is leading us. It seems like that's where we're heading as a society, because people are just tired. You know, I think a lot of people are just frustrated, not having any control or choices over their lives. What they do, it's largely insignificant. And of course, you know, I'm not saying that you're not free to like walk outside, go to the park or whatever. And obviously like there's some places that are a lot worse, but I think we have the obligation as Americans to be like, no, like this is supposed to be a bastion of freedom. Like this is supposed to be the freest country in the world. We need to stand up for it. So to answer your question, like, I don't know. I think it's going to come. I don't know how long it's going to take. I think a lot of people, unfortunately, are placed in a position where there's just not much they could do about it. They have kids, they're busy, they have work. Some people are working two jobs right now just to get by. And that would actually be a great argument for, you know, how they've combated inflation against us to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You know, we saw those Trump checks go out. We saw, you know, Biden hand out a bunch of money as well. The Federal Reserve printed up trillions of dollars. Well, guess what? Like that caught up to us, and it caught up to us really quick. And when you're injecting all that money into the economy without goods and services that are actually replicating that money, then there's going to be problems, you know, and that's exactly where we're at now. So we're at a 9.2 inflation rate, which is the highest it's been in 40 years. And that's just what they're telling us, right?
Yeah, that's what they're telling us. But if you go to the grocery store, it's not 9.2, it's 30 to 40%, you know?
Sure. Oh yeah. I mean, that's just what they're saying. Of course, these are always figures from a month or two behind because that's just how government works. So, you know, I would suggest like that is one form of keeping us suppressed, keeping us oppressed, you know, is like, look, how many people can actually go out there and protest? How many people could actually read that Murray Rothbard book and try to educate themselves so they could understand what's going on? How many people could do that? I don't know, river cleanup in their neighborhood or whatever. Like these things are accumulative. People believe that some of these things government are supposed to take care of in our society, in our country, in our neighborhoods, but yet they don't do anything about it. And I think that same mindset applies to educating themselves and understanding what's going on. So a lot of people haven't really had that spark and realization that we are in the age of information. Anything that you want to know is out there. It's attainable. You could go on the internet, you could find it, you could search for it, which means you could educate yourself. You could get yourself out of this low level thinking, this low effort thinking that most people are stuck in, and actually empower yourself and actually, you know, empower people around you. But that's not the case when people are working two jobs. That's not the case when people are trying to do what they can to make sure that their kids have food and they have clothes on their back, you know. And I know we're not that desperate in this country, you know, we have a pretty overall, a pretty high level of standard of living, but even still, you know,
it's all relative though.
Of course. You know? Yeah, sure. Yeah,
I hate that when I'm not libertarian anymore, but I still listen to a lot of libertarian podcasts and stuff. And I hear like Dave Smith, like say stuff like, oh, well, like a homeless person in America is still in the top 10% richest people in the world or something like that. But I mean, that doesn't count. I mean, just because you have like an iPhone in America doesn't mean that you're like wealthier or better off than, you know, a sharecropper in Bangladesh or something like that who makes 50 cents a day. It's hard to quantitate that way, I think. So
sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what else? Hey Deborah, do you know what Joe Biden's name was in Hunter Biden's phone?
No.
It's
not big guy.
Pedo Pete.
Oh, get out.
Yeah. Do you know about this story, Jason?
Yeah. I caught wind of that one as well. Now, again, I just want to specify, like, there's no exact proof that we know for sure that it's Joe Biden, but there are, you know, sources and information that point towards that being probable, which apparently that I can't remember the name of the exact alias that Joe Biden uses when he checks into certain places, but it was Pete or Peter, right?
It's Peter. Correctly. I forget the last name, but the last name is that character is a reoccurring character in Tom Clancy books.
Right. Yes.
And maybe. In Tom Clancy books, he's a Russian spy who's bringing America down from the inside, Deborah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's no shortage of creepy Biden videos of him sniffing young girls and touching them kind of inappropriately. And sometimes, you know, it's like, well, maybe like people are editing this or like maybe it's just like take it out of context or something. But then you see like the young girl, like visibly like being creeped out and being like, ew, like, get away from me, you creep. And you're like, okay, like, no, that just happened. Like, he is kind of a weirdo like that. And then you start to see some of this, you know, footage and pictures of Hunter with potentially underage, you know, girls. And it's like, wow. Like, so the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, you know? But you know, I think ultimately like this stuff is important. And I think ultimately if this was Donald Trump Jr., you know, Trump's son, engage in any of this stuff, then the media would have been having a field day. It would have been on every single news network. It would have been what they were talking about. It would have been more of a spectacle than the January 6th commission, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that it is Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, and, you know, obviously like that's Democrat, establishment Democrats, like they're not going to talk about it. But, and there's a problem there. There's a clear double standard. I'm not somebody who's either left or right. I don't even lean left or right. Like, I don't believe in either of those, but we have to call it out because there's a clear standard there. But at the same time, I'm not big on bashing presidents. And I know this is like a huge point within this country, especially within the left-right divide. It's like, well, Trump did this and Biden did this. And yeah, it's important to understand. It's important to know, but we kind of have to move like deeper than that. You know, we kind of have to look a little bit past just these front men for the oligarchy, you know, these front men for the establishment, the status quo. So I'm not to say we can't keep talking about this, but I just kind of want to make it clear that like, I'm not particularly like huge on the president bashing thing, just because it's kind of cliche to a certain extent, right? Like if you look at how many people are within government, if you look at all the bureaucrats and all the different alphabet agencies, many of which aren't even elected, you know, they're selected by different bureaucrats and politicians and lawmakers.
Yeah, all the NGOs and stuff like that as well. So
sure, you start to realize that the people at the very top don't really have as much control and power as the American public thinks they do, you know?
Well, I mean, what do you think the last time that Joe Biden actually, someone in the cabinet listened to what Joe Biden suggested and it came to any sort of fruition? What do you think, Deborah?
I just...
20 years, maybe?
Like, probably. I mean, what gets me is that, you know, okay, Hunter can call his dad pedo Pete, and obviously we live in the information age, and this is out there. Why even
it's a war on information,
why,
Deborah.
Why even what, Deborah?
It's a war on
information. Do they think that we're so ignorant that we couldn't put it together? Or is it that they're just so out of, you know, the realm of normalcy that they don't even...
Oh, like, why does he have his dad in his phone as Pedo Pete? And, like, yeah. Why is he dropping off his laptop at a... with, you know... Yeah. Maybe
is it that they just are so far out of reality that they think it doesn't matter? Because
I mean, Deborah, you live in Marin County, one of the wealthiest places in the United States, probably. You guys live an extremely modest life compared to a lot of people around you, and you guys mm-hmm. are doing pretty good. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you've seen probably some of the kids that grew up with your daughters that come from really, really, really wealthy families. Mm-hmm. And how did a lot of those kids turn out? People that have never, ever had to answer to anything, never had any responsibility, stuff like that.
I don't know the answer to that because I don't know those.
I'm not asking for specific.
Yeah, but I'm imagining
people, but
it's.
I'm not alluding to anybody specifically. Yeah. But I, you know, I grew up in the Napa Valley. I grew up with really rich kids, you know, and I know kids that have, who, you know, I don't know them anymore, but I knew people that were just given everything, given a business, given the money to. It's like I know because Emily, she'll show me pictures of all these kids that she went to school with who just live in LA and like make Instagram videos now. It's like those kids they're not famous, they're not making money from it, but how are they able to do all that? It's just because Hunter Biden has lived an extremely different life than you and I had growing up, you know. he's been insulated from the world and been given everything on it. And that, I'd argue, I mean, I you know, it's hard if he's a pedophile to feel bad for him, but I've said this before, I feel bad for the guy. That guy's not living a good life, you know. Just because you got cocaine and Ukrainian hookers doesn't that's not the recipe for a 50-year-old guy to be happy, you know.
Yeah, and he's constantly, you know, under the microscope when it comes to conservative media. And yeah, I mean, I could have some empathy in that regard as well. Of course, you know, I don't forgive any of his nefarious action with children, as you had mentioned. But yeah, even I guess you could even say the same about Joe Biden, right? I mean, like, he's so old. I mean, people claim he has dementia. Obviously now he has cancer.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys happen to see that.
I think
that was just another gaffe, but he just happened to say he has cancer. He has COVID.
I know he has COVID, but I didn't know he had cancer.
He said it.
There was a recent speech and people are like, okay, either like this is the biggest gaffe he's ever made or like he really has cancer. And most people just kind of chalked it up to being a gaffe, which I think speaks volumes about how they look at the president of the United States.
I have cancer. Oops, not really. That just fell out of my mouth.
Yeah, as far as I could tell, there was nothing clarified about it afterward. But yeah, I mean, they basically prop him up with a stick, you know, they give him ice cream after, you know, he gets done talking. And I mean, that's perfect. And I was thinking about this morning. I mean, it's almost to the point where I feel like the establishment ruling, you know, elite or whatever, like this is their new strategy. And they kind of applied the same thing to George W. Bush. It's like, put the dumbest guy you possibly can up there. And then that way he's not really held accountable for anything. You know, he's just so incompetent and clueless, like, you just don't think he's going to, you know, he's basically harmless. He's just a proxy. So, you know, then everybody else could do what they want to do. And they just put him in front of the camera and he makes some mistakes and we all laugh it off and, you know, nothing ever changes. We don't take it seriously. So, but I might've misunderstood your question, Deborah, when you asked that, but I thought maybe you were talking more on like a broad range as far as like, why does the media, you know, put this out, this kind of information and like, do they take us for idiots, you know, like, do they think we can't connect the dots, whatever? And I don't know if that was quite what you were getting at, but like my thought on it is like, yeah, I think they kind of do to a certain extent. Like, I think they realize there are a bunch of these people who are like normies, you know, who just don't invest the time and energy to look at these things. And so they'll just see a headline and that's enough. Like they won't read the story. They won't investigate. They won't try to, you know, collaborate facts on different sources and stuff. It's just, hey, like that's the information they're feeding me now. And we see this actually be a very effective strategy. If you look at, you know, the fear mongering that was going on for COVID, and then it was almost like that template, they shifted it to Ukraine. And now all of a sudden there's this orchestrated outrage for Ukraine. Everybody's in, you know, supporting Ukraine. And so it does seem like that strategy is very effective for the establishment because they could literally say, you know, go from one topic to the next, whether it be monkeypox or abortion or Ukraine or whatever. And they have almost an army of idiots happily ready to, you know, support whatever cause that they throw out there or say that they should support. So to a certain extent, I think it is viable and it does work, you know. Unfortunately, in this day and age, like there's still a lot of people who are asleep, you know, and there's a lot of people who are waking up and, you know, thanks to COVID for that, that was a big waking up, you know, moment for a lot of people. But I think it's that. And then I think that there's just too many people who, even if they do believe it, even if they do know about it, they just don't know how to take action. They don't know what to do. Like what they think, maybe I could vote the person out. Maybe I can, you know, have some type of marginal change within my community if I vote for X, Y, or Z or whatever. And I think that's a big problem as well, is that even when people do understand that this is happening, they don't really know how to apply themselves. They don't know what they can do to really rectify the situation.
Yeah. My question was really more about how Hunter or anybody in, you know, the elite or whatever, can say something that we all see as incriminating, but it's not a concern, or is it just? Well,
check it out, Deborah. What if you go after this podcast, you go out with a group of three of your friends and start talking about this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, they'd tell me
Exactly. And that's the answer to your question right there.
Yeah, to a certain degree. And again, we're kind of couched in these political identities, you know? So, you know, Deborah, you're going to be the crazy conspiracy theorist if you happen to mention this to any of your friends, you know, and that they all of a sudden that connection is severed, you know, and they'll never look at you the same. And right. I think that is what, keeps people in their bubble of comfort, and also just keeps their mind locked, you know? And so I think most people try to do whatever they can to be as most socially accepted from their family and friends without creating any waves or issues by questioning popular opinion, you know? And I think that's just a normal, natural trait that we have as human beings, as tribalistic humans and animals that we are. And it does take people with integrity to like really take a look at this stuff and not only analyze it, come to, you know, your own conclusions, your own truths about it, but then actually speak out about it and try to figure out ways to make change. And in my opinion, those are the people that are doing the good work, you know, like we talk about, you know, Christ and Christianity and stuff. And I'm not huge on religion myself, but like, we're talking about the good work, like that is the good work, you know, we're trying to enlighten humanity. Sorry, I could keep going. Sorry, I could ramble. I could certainly ramble. Cut me off. Just tell me to shut up.
No, man, this is great. We've seen recently that Ukraine is almost kind of falling out of favor now, and it's like not spoken about quite as much. I saw that NPR recently came out with an article saying that, you know, are giving all these billions of dollars to Ukraine should be questioned because of their history of corruption. That's coming out now, you know, post donation. what do you make of that? And maybe what have you noticed as the next thing?
Yeah, well, the great Scott Horton from antiwar.com, not sure if you guys are familiar with him, but he's been a brilliant anti-war mind for decades now. He wasn't
the best on COVID, though. Let's be honest.
Scott Horton?
Yeah. He was terrified of the air.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to double check on that one. Yeah. But he suggested that by funding Ukraine, by sending them all these weapons, it only extended and delayed any type of peace treaty or possible way to resolve this between the two countries. And he even goes as far to say is like Biden should have been the person who brokered that deal, like, and was like the middleman arbiter in that. And I think you're right. I think you hit the nail on the head. I don't really have too much more to say on it, but I think you're exactly right. Like, what good is that now, NPR? You know, like, you're saying that now the billions have already been transferred, billions of our tax dollars. Let's be, you know, specific about that, which probably could have been used in this country for, you know, any number of things. And it doesn't help us now, you know, and especially for the left who tends to go along to get along with some of these, especially when there's administration that they favor in office, you know, that would have been very helpful for them, I think. Now, I think the people who are going to object to it probably already are. I think the people who paying attention probably already spoke out. So who knows, like, how much NPR, one NPR article, and there was a handful of others that kind of came out with the same narrative, you know, like, oh, like, what have we done? Like, we said billions to Ukraine, like, maybe we should follow up and figure out where it's going. Little too late, you know. As far as the next thing, it very much seems like the climate emergency. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but apparently last week Biden was supposed to declare a climate emergency. And as you guys know, especially with COVID, you know, anytime they apply emergency powers or measures, it's very, very rare that they're relinquished and, you know, ever given up. So that was kind of a big red flag to me, seeing him talk about that. And it seems like, as far as I could tell, like, any solution that surrounds itself with the whole climate crisis basically just puts more money into the government's pocket. You know, like, there's nothing feasible to say that, like, I've heard anyway, that's like, okay, that seems like a reasonable solution to this, you know, quote crisis or this quote issue. Now, even that alone, there's a lot of subjective opinion on, like, is there really climate change happening? Is this something that's man-made? Is it normal? You know, so I don't know. I think the biggest problem, in my opinion, is that The U.S. military is by far the biggest polluter on Earth. It pollutes more than 140 countries. So why are they pointing the finger at people like us for driving our car to and from work? You know, like this, that's insane.
Yeah, I'm the bad, so, I got a diesel tractor. I'm the bad guy. there was a great video clip of, it was very frustrating to watch, of Abby Martin calling out Nancy Pelosi at some sort of climate convention or something like that, asking her about her like voting, you know, for military funding, but talking about climate change and stuff like that. And so
I think I saw that. Yeah. And God, Pelosi is such a bad liar. I don't know if you happen to see the recent clip. They asked her if she's ever given any stock opinions or information to her husband. Cause like just recently, like he's,
yeah.
And she was like, no, of course not. Like, I've never done that. And she's like, just looks so guilty. You know, it's like, you could tell when somebody's lying, and that, I mean, she's lying. Yeah,
They're batting 1,000 when it comes to stock trades. You know, they're just like the most, the smartest people in the world. They should be in that instead of politics, but you know.
Right. Sure. No, I
guess
agree.
I bet you if one wasn't in it in stocks and one wasn't in politics, they wouldn't have such a good batting average.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. 100%, man. 100%.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, we could talk about her. That's a good, you know, Deborah's progress can be measured in her respect for Nancy Pelosi, because when we started this thing,
she
loved her, you know,
she's our gal.
She's the queen of San Francisco. She's literally San Francisco.
Yeah.
Royalty.
What part of the country are you in, Jason?
I'm in Sacramento, so I'm not too far from Deborah. Yeah. I even lived in San Francisco for a handful of years.
Yeah. I'm from, I grew up, you know, into high school in the Bay Area and all that stuff, and lived in Oakland and San Francisco for 25 years. And like, it's like, yeah, I voted from time to time. I was not really doing much back then, but I don't even like Deborah. Nobody even remembers like voting for her. She's just there. Perpetually.
Yeah, you know? She's been there for so long now. Her and Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. I feel like I don't know if I necessarily blame you, Deborah, because they've done a very good job of the emotional manipulation. They've done a good job of really propping themselves up as heroes. And the system in itself, you know, like it's so normalized that government is an entity in our lives that's the only feasible solution for any type of social change. I mean, they've really hammered that home, and probably more to your generation than any others, you know, at least our generation. And you know, I'm on the cusp of being a millennial and a Gen X, but at least we had the internet, you know, and like we were able to kind of, like most of us were, you know, grew up in Nintendos and stuff. So we're over here playing with our computers, and like, we're able to kind of like see things and look at other information. But I think they really pulled the wool over your generation's eyes. And especially, you know, I don't want to speculate how old you are here, but like, I'm not saying this is associated to you, but like the protests from like the Vietnam era and like the,
yeah,
all the hippies all the hippies. And it's like, well, where do they go? You know, like all these people are like free love and peace and stuff. And I think, you know, for one reason or another, they've disappeared, you know? And so I do feel like that generation, you know, while that you guys have had it amazing, amazing life, you know, the boomers have had some of the like highest standard of living compared to
most prosperous country ever in the history of the world handed over to them.
Yep. Sure. But at the same time,
we've done.
I mean, it's that you guys have been, you know, neck deep in propaganda almost your entire lives too. You know?
Well, you know, when I was a little kid, you know, you had a newscaster who was not talking his opinion. He was giving you the news.
Well, he was talking someone else's opinion, whatever.
Yeah. However, you know, I don't know anybody who really trusts their news source anymore. You know, we all get that this is your opinion. It's not, you know, fact. It's just.
Your friends don't trust Don Lemon anymore?
Oh, they probably do, but I think they understand that there is a bend, that you're not going to hear anything out of his mouth that doesn't go along with the party.
Yes.
Agenda.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just talking about this. There's definitely a problem with legitimacy for the legacy media now. And even I just saw a poll, like it's at it, like people, you know, were polled like how much they still believe in like the honesty and truth within media. And it was like at an all time low right now. And yeah, it's exactly, you know, that it's a problem. And the thing is too, is that there's nobody really filling in that vacuum or that hole, you know? So mm-hmm. there's still this kind of air of legitimacy to mainstream media where we all still kind of point at it. And even people within my industry with alternative news, it's like they've put the hammer down so hard on us when it comes to censorship that like all we can do at this point is point at the mainstream media, their narratives, and kind of poke holes in it, you know? So unfortunately, we're all kind of playing this game where we know it's not exactly honest and it's not exactly real. And there's certainly bias embedded into it. But at the same time, it's like kind of the only thing we have to say, like, okay, this is actually legitimate. Like, this is actually true. And I think it's been engineered that way on purpose over the past 5 or 6 years now.
Jason, we've had you for almost an hour. Let's, I've been trying to do this on every show I do, is leave on a high note with, you know, maybe some hope, maybe some suggestion for what can be done. And if there isn't anything, feel free to say that as well. But what's a solution that somebody, just a normal everyday person like us can do? What can we start doing? You know, I mean, I went the agorist road. I got the hell out of town and live in the middle of nowhere now on a farm. So what else can be done for the normal suburban city dweller?
Well, I would say the first thing is to educate yourself, arm yourself with information, and information's power, you know, and knowledge is power. That's the very first thing. Once you can empower yourself with the understanding of what's going on, you don't even have to have a full grasp, but just try to kind of get the basics. And I would point people towards the ideology of voluntarism, which basically asserts that all human interactions or transactions should be voluntary and society should be based on consent. Obviously, we're far from that right now, you know, with taxation. People within government claim the authority to point guns at us and, you know, claim a certain amount of our production and our money. And if we don't pay up, guess what? They'll come back with more guns and more people and more authorities, so-called authorities. And eventually, if we still don't pay up, they'll put us in a cage. If we try to defend ourselves,
they'll kill us. If you say you're not going to a cage, they'll kill
you. They claim the legal authority to kill us. And that's, it sounds sensationalist and alarmist, but that's the absolute truth. So I think once you understand if a lot of this is problem that's systemic in society stems from the state itself, stems from the initiation of violence, stems from the lack of consent, then you'll start to understand that we can change this if we actually all understand that all authority is an illusion. It doesn't exist. It's just claimed. Nobody born into this world has authority. They only claim that they do. So I think once you kind of understand that, then you open up your mind, you empower yourself, then you start working in your community to decentralize, whether it be agorist school of thought, creating a business or a product or a service that goes outside of the scope and reach of government, that over, you know, it empowers people and gives them tools to do things without government interference, or whether I'd be in the political realm within voting for, you know, libertarians, or I guess you're not a libertarian anymore, but people who, I guess, set the standard as far as your own opinions. There's a lot of that needs to be done right now. Unfortunately, the hardcore left has been very effective in that sense within their local communities. And they're starting to really co-op a lot of our towns and cities. And we're having our rights taken away. You know, we're having our rights systematically removed from us. So we do need more people in positions of government, whether it be locally. I don't really believe too much in federal voting. And then last but not least, we need boots on the ground. We need people protesting. We need people doing civil disobedience. We need people getting the word out there, waking people up, doing man on the street interviews, doing First Amendment audits, doing cop watching. All this stuff creates and contributes to a hive mind that wakes people up so they understand and acknowledge the reality around them. And as I mentioned earlier to Deborah, we're in the info wars right now. We're knee deep in the info wars. And, you know, we have to be wise. We have to use our discernment. We have to see the real world that surrounds us. And by doing that, we could get out of this mess. And of course, it's going to be an intergenerational shift. You know, that also includes peaceful parenting. You know, I mean, all these things are absolutely important and critical to moving towards a more free, peaceful, and prosperous society.
Yeah. Have kids and raise them the right way too. Raise them to believe these principles. That's also a good place to start. Do you see a split in society coming soon?
I think we're already there, man. Honestly. Yeah. In fact, let me just read you a wonderful quote here by Alex Zack. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Alex Zack. He's kind of blown up over the past couple of years in the medical freedom movement. But he says there are now two primary diametrically opposed perceptions of reality existing in the same exact place. One is primarily influenced by media, government, and the pharmaceutical propaganda, and the other primarily influenced by logic, lived experiences, observations, and intuition. And I couldn't agree more. It seems like there's a group of low effort thinkers who want other people to control their lives, tell them what to do, and they just entertain themselves with what they say they did in the Romans,
bread and circus.
There you go. I don't know why I couldn't remember that. And then there's people like us who are actually asking the questions or having conversations. We're talking about these things. We're poking holes in the narratives and the official story. So, I don't know if we're going to necessarily divorce, and I don't want to see a violent, bloody revolution. And that's why I do this kind of work, because I'd rather wake people up and see people empower themselves and demand freedom in their lives without any type of violence or bloodshed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're going to see a hot civil war, but what I'm hoping for is people leave the cities that don't want it, and people that do go into these smart cities and live in subscription-based cities, and the people who don't are out here doing our own thing. You know, I live in the woods, you know, and I listened to Owen Benjamin the other day on Pete Quinones' show, and they made a great point. It's like the people with the IQs of like 70 to 80 and the people like 120 to 130 are going to be fine, and then like the midwits in between that 80 to 120, and then the really, really smart people are the ones who are going to have a hard time. So that really struck a chord with me. The people that are the 110 guy, that guy is the one who thinks he knows everything, you know, and it takes like a little more intelligence to realize that you don't know anything, I think.
Sure. So, yeah. Great point. And academically smart too is completely different from, you know, being, savvy to a lot of what we're just talking about.
Some of the people, like, you know, Mensa level people that I know fell for the problem with the air hook, line, and sinker. And it just goes back to like, is it easier to train a smart dog or a dumb dog, you know? So
sure. Now we're all gonna, I think the masses are headed towards idiocracy, you know, and we'll just be all on our agorist seasteading island and we'll be happy, you know. Not that I really want that, to be honest. You know, I'd rather just continue to advocate for the idea that, you know, we just leave each other alone, unless obviously there's, you know, some type of violence and you have the right for self-defense. But we, you know, we leave each other alone, we leave each other's property alone, and we let each other live in peace. I don't really see what the problem with that is, but apparently I'm an extremist just for thinking
I agree with that 100%, you know. And Deborah, final thoughts, any last questions, anything?
No, this has been really helpful and informative. Awesome. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. My pleasure.
Right on, Jason. Well, thank you so much for this. We really appreciate you coming on and shedding light on all this and giving us some good solutions. And we'd love to talk to you again sometime in the future. So we'll stay in contact, man.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, man. Yeah, let me know when it's out. Send me the link. I'll share it around my network and let's do it again.
Right on. Thank you, bro. Appreciate it. All right. See you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people, all those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass to lay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And I want you. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order are idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that seven-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.